Many years ago, when I had just separated from my first husband, I felt very isolated. My parents disapproved of the separation, so I was cut off from them, and I had moved to another town, away from most of my friends. Feeling very much alone one day, I called an old friend to see if we might get together for lunch. "No," she said, "I really don't want to get involved in your difficulties. Why don't you wait until everything is settled and then call me?" Well, I just sat for a long time. My preschool children were upset because I was upset. And they came and they clung to me. And I felt overwhelmed by my situation. As I sat there, my thoughts became more and more depressive. I even wondered if I could go on at all. After a long time, my little son said, "Mommy, when are we going to eat?" And in that moment, the reality of his presence and his need turned me away from despair and became the baseline of my life for the 20 years that followed. That little boy, by the way, is now, of course, middle age. And he wrote the witch story that you heard earlier. I remember another day when I was at the beach and my children were busy playing. It was one of those perfect days. The sun was warm, the water was cool and sparkling, and I experienced a tremendous sense of well-being and peace. The warmth of that feeling permeated every area of my life for days, and the memory has stayed with me for years. On both of those occasions, I encountered the necessary angel, the reality of my situation at that moment. And both times, the encounter had a lasting effect on my life. The poet Wallace Stevens explores that relationship between reality and the human imagination. He calls reality the necessary angel. But why is that of particular concern to us? Reality is all around us, in nature, in relationships, and in the given circumstances of our lives. Why make such a point of its omnipresence? Well, I think that in past historic periods, and for some people even today, reality could be taken for granted because it was described and defined and codified in belief systems, in religions, and in social structures that were handed down from one generation to another. Now, philosophers have speculated about the nature of reality for many centuries, but for most people in any particular society, there was a wholeness, an integrity of belief about reality that was uncritically accepted. In modern Western society, however, that wholeness has broken down. We live in a pluralistic society where there is no one way of belief or behavior accepted uncritically by everyone. We are all asked now to become philosophers, or as the Zen Buddhist D.T. Suzuki puts it, artists of life. We are asked to encounter the necessary angel, reality, with no authorities to guide us, with nothing but our own personal experience, our minds and imaginations, to make sense out of the data which bombards us. Our senses are overwhelmed with stimuli, and we struggle to find meaning and value, to sort out what is important, what is just, what is humane, what is loving. It's a huge task, and there's tremendous confusion expressed in various ways in our culture. One example that always struck me when I worked as a school psychologist, and this may have changed, this was a long time ago, but anyway, what struck me was the neat but confusing clutter of elementary school classrooms. Pictures, charts, letters, papers, calendars, etc., covered every inch of wall space and even much of the chalkboard. One literally did not know where to focus one's attention. There was so much stimulation available. Objects, animals, plants, books, art materials covered every table, and there were often seasonal decorations blocking the windows. Sometimes music blared in one corner, a TV in another, while a child across the room sat with earphones on listening to a taped lesson. There seemed to me to be no working philosophy, no guidelines as to what was important and what was trivial. Everything was one big jumble, and I always wanted to escape to some bare, peaceful place where I could observe one thing at a time. Well, what can we do to bring some order out of this apparent chaos? We can become fatalistic, giving in to the feeling of powerlessness. Or we can step back and look carefully at our world, at the various kinds of experience we have, and begin to make some choices, some judgments as to which experiences we value and which ones we would like to avoid or eliminate. If some realities are unavoidable, we can at least decide what attitude we will take toward those events. In short, we can use our imaginations to organize the data we receive. We can actively evaluate and learn from our encounters with reality. If we are not to give up in despair before life's realities, we must take on this active, organizing role. It is an ongoing interaction between one's inner imaginative self and the events, both personal and societal, that make up the fabric of life. That interaction is, I believe, a spiritual journey, a way of finding meaning and purpose and taking responsibility for one's life. There are pitfalls, of course. One can retreat too far into the imagination, leave reality behind, and escape into unrealistic ideals or fantasies and neglect testing them in the daily encounter with reality. Some poets and artists journey so far into the realm of imagination that their work becomes obscure and unintelligible to others. And some Unitarian Universalists are so pleased with their ideals that they may never get around to acting on them. On the other hand, one can become so absorbed in the details of practical realities that there is no time to exercise the imagination. To give thought to the meaning of what we're doing or the goals and values that are important to us, we may allow ourselves to be at the mercy of the necessary angel instead of in active interaction and encounter with it. The spiritual journey, the interaction between imagination and reality, requires a delicate balance. Perhaps the most dangerous pitfall of all is that we will assume our personal or cultural understanding of reality to be the only possible understanding. One of the greatest gifts Unitarian Universalists have to offer is our commitment to respect the richness of diversity. We make a point of not handing down any creed to be accepted uncritically. Instead, we embark upon our own spiritual journeys, attempting to use our own minds and imaginations to make sense of our lives. This journey is very puzzling to many people. What is our authority? What keeps us from becoming hedonists, interested only in our own pleasure, or masochists, sacrificing all for the well-being of others? Well, I believe that if we look carefully and responsibly at our world, in its beauty and in its suffering, we cannot remain hedonists. That if we truly value and trust our inner selves, we cannot allow those precious selves to be destroyed in masochism. What saves us in either case is the balance between our inner selves and that necessary angel, reality. Let's take a few moments now to consider the balance in our own lives between reality and our inner imaginative selves. What realities are you facing right now in your personal life? Can you take time to bring the full inner resources of your imagination into that encounter? What is your most cherished social value or ideal? What can you imagine doing to implement it in this community? What do you love most in nature? When did you last experience the joy, that love? How do you feel about the state of your spiritual journey? The journey can be exhilarating and it can be lonely. It requires an openness to new forms of inner and outer reality and a willingness to be fully aware of our present in all its pain or in all its joy.